Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Anika Zubair, and welcome back to the next episode of the Customer Success Channel podcast, brought to you by PlanHat, the modern customer platform. This podcast is created for anyone working in or interested in the customer success field. On this podcast, we will speak to leaders in the industry about their experiences and their definitions of customer success and get their advice and best practices on how to run a CS organization. Today on the podcast, we are speaking to Dave Jackson. Dave is the CEO of The Customer Co. and interim CCO at DeepCrawl. He is usually advising senior SaaS executives on building customer-focused companies, and he is currently supporting a number of B2B SaaS companies and investors in building CS as a company-wide capability. He is also publishing his fourth book, Customer-Led Growth, A CEO's Guide to Building a B2B SaaS Company, which will be published on the 27th of September. And on today's episode, we will dive a bit deeper into one of the chapters of his book called People, Not Customers, which will highlight the word customers that we have used in customer success are faceless entities, and it's really about the individual, and we should focus on people and not customers. So let's chat to Dave on this topic. So before we get into today's topic, can you please let our listeners know a bit about yourself, what you're doing at DeepCrawl, and just a little bit of background about what you do, Dave?
So let's start with the background. I am probably older than I look. I'd like to think I'm older than I look. I've been around a while, done lots and lots of different things. The thing that drove me to where I am now and on the podcast is, in 2000, I started a SaaS company in the UK. Before the word SaaS was invented, probably one of the first 10 SaaS companies in the UK. Grew it organically. We were in the forms and surveys and feedback business and led it through two liquidity events. So I sold 49.9% to SurveyMonkey in 2010 and then did a back-to-back deal and sold 100% to Calidus Cloud in 2014. Since when, I stayed around with them for a year or so. And since then, I've been going back to what I really enjoy doing, which is coaching and consulting work. So I work with CS leaders, CEOs, purely in the B2B SaaS space. That's the only space that I work these days. And that's what led me to DeepCrawl. I started out as a coach to Nabil Daba, who was the VP of Customer Success at the time. I must have coached him so well, he got another job. So he's now working in Copenhagen. And because of a number of other things, the CEO at the time asked me if I'd step in as an interim, which I did. He said it was going to be for 3 months. It ended up being for 8 months. And I finished my role as interim chief customer officer there a couple of weeks ago. And now I'm back to being a coach there. So I coached DeepCrawl and I've got a couple of other clients as well where I do coaching work.
Amazing, amazing. I love how that turned into a much bigger gig as well. And great for Nabil also, that getting so much coaching, you got coaching him into a new job. But I also really want to talk to you today about your new book that's coming out. At the time of recording, it hasn't come out yet, but I know it's coming out in about a week or so, which is called Customer-Led Growth. And I kind of wanted to ask, what led you to write this sort of book about customer success, and any tips for first-time inspiring authors? I know you've written a few, but why this book? And then also any tips that you might want to share with us?
This will be my fourth book that I've authored. I'll tell you now, you don't write a business book to make a fortune. Yeah, this is not J.K. Rowling or Harry Potter and things like that. Well, there's a bit of magic in it, I like to think. To be quite honest, I wrote the book because I needed to get down a set of ideas. I find that process of writing forces you to think through your ideas, put some structure around it, put some order around it, and get to the point where you can actually explain it more clearly. So the sole purpose for writing the book was because I wanted to write a book. Tips for aspiring authors? Well, write because you want to write, not because you want to sell. If you've got an idea, you think it's different, put it down on paper. If you need to think things through, write about it. I do quite a lot of articles, and most of the reason that I write articles is because I need to formalize what is probably half-thought thoughts.
Yep, fair enough. And I think also what you just said about writing because it needs to be written is a really great point, because I think the customer success discipline as a whole doesn't have very much written content on it. Well, at least not 10 years ago. It probably has a lot more now. But also, I wanted to ask why customer-led growth, because a lot of people talk about product-led growth. A lot of people talk about sales or revenue and even marketing-led growth. What drove you to talk about customer-led growth? And also, why do you think it's so important?
It's very difficult to think of a successful business that doesn't have customers. It's a bit like breathing. You know, you're not going to survive if you don't breathe. You're not going to survive as a business if you don't have customers.
Very true.
And don't get really hung up on titles, but I do think as a principle, B2B SaaS is all about customers. The reason I wanted to write the book was my experience is that SaaS businesses aren't really difficult. Fundamentally, it's quite a simple proposition. All you do is you figure out how to solve a problem for somebody in a different way using a product. You then figure out, well, okay, who am I solving for? So you know who you're targeting. You know what sort of journey you're going to take them through their entire life cycle at a very high level. And you understand what value means at each of those stages. So actually, all a SaaS company does is figure out what value it's delivering to whom when. And that's what you market. That's what you sell. That's what your product should deliver. That's what CSPS and all the rest of the organization helps and enables. So, you know, the customer is the red thread that runs through the whole organization. It should therefore be the basis on which we design our organizations.
For sure. And I think that it's so simple. Like you said, it's easy. Why shouldn't we be customer-led growth? Because the customer is the heart of everything we are doing. And it should be the only focus and the North Star metric for a SaaS business.
Take you up on a slight point. It's not easy. It's simple.
It's not. It's not at all. I didn't agree to that.
It's easy to understand. It's actually damn difficult to do.
It is. It is. And I think a lot of people take that for granted. And that's why maybe we don't speak about customer-led growth that often. And to be honest, it's a good topic and a good controversial thing to bring up in the space as well. I'm now curious about what your favorite chapter was to write in the book and why.
That is a difficult question because it's a bit like saying, which is your favorite child? Because you put time and effort into each of them, and hopefully there's nothing in the book that I didn't want to talk about. Obviously, there isn't. I think probably the favorite one is, the core of the book is built around seven principles. And one of the principles is called success by design. Remember, this is a book that's targeted at B2B SaaS CEOs and how to build a successful B2B SaaS company. And I think the thing I learned in my time as a CEO was one of the most important roles of a CEO is that of chief organization designer. There's a quote, and it's in the book, and I can't remember it exactly, but it basically says something along the lines that every organization is perfectly designed to achieve the results it does. It's a truism. If your organization is getting certain results, it's because that's the way that you've designed it, perhaps not purposefully.
That's quite interesting. Like, because I'm just thinking of like how your organization does really well at sales, but maybe the customer doesn't renew because of product issues or something. Like, you've designed an organization to be really good at selling. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
And you know, if you go back to the product-led, market-led, sales-led, the reason that I think customer-led is so important is because customers are great integrating vehicle. Because mm-hmm. they don't care about your organization. They don't care whether you've got a marketing team, a sales team. All they care about is, can I buy this? Is it a good price? Is it going to deliver what I want it to do? So success by design, and that chapter is all about how does a chief exec really think about putting the customer at the heart of their business? And it's not about lines and boxes on an org chart. That's organization structure, which in my book is probably 5% of organization design. It's much more about how do you get the organization pulling together. It's about vision. It's about values. It's about processes. It's about metrics. It's about culture.
Amazing. And can you share maybe one metric that gets an organization behind customer at the heart of everything you do? Because like you said, there's an org chart. You can have a customer-facing team. You can have CSM, professional services, support, whatever you name it. That's the dotted line of organization, which is fine. But what's a metric that you would say makes an organization put the customer at the heart of everything they do?
I think there are two. NRR is one. It is an important metric. I think there's a better one if you are an organization of a certain maturity. And I think the better one is lifetime value to CAC ratio. And the reason I think that is, lifetime value suggests that you have been able to attract customers that you can retain. And CAC means I can attract them at a reasonable price. So it's got both a revenue impact and it's got a cost impact. So one of the things we did at ClickTools many years ago was we put, and there's a lot of talk about comp plans and things like that. I think, again, it's where a lot of organizations make mistakes. Comp is important, but one of the roles of compensation and comp plans is to make sure that people are doing the right things. If you comp your sales team and your marketing team and your CS team and your product team on different things, where is the incentive for them to collaborate? It's not.
There's not. You have to really make sure that the comp plan is aligned to a customer and that North Star metric, like you were just saying.
So why not scrap all the comp plans and put everybody onto the same bonus plan?
Definitely. Yeah, I would agree. I think that if anything, like there should be only one company comp plan, which is, like you said, either NRR, LTV to CAC ratio, whatever that is, it just should be aligned. Whether you're a salesperson, a product manager, a CSM, there should just be one metric you're compensated for.
And that is one thing we did at ClickTools. Now, I wasn't able to get rid of commission. If I was starting again and I'm thinking about doing that, I wouldn't pay commission to salespeople.
Ooh, that's a controversial topic that we can do a whole nother podcast on.
And by the way, that includes CSMs. I think quotas and commission for salespeople and CSMs are actually more damaging than they are supportive. But one thing we did at ClickTools as part of an org redesign, so we rethought our target customers, we thought closely about the lifetime engagement cycle, and one thing we did was we put everybody on the same bonus plan, revenue growth times customer satisfaction. And we reported that regularly, wasn't perfect. Today I'd probably choose NRR or CLTV to CAC ratio.
Interesting. I want to dive a little bit more into this, but not get too much off topic. But how did you actually get other leaders in the organization to believe in that as well? Because it's one thing to say in it, but you have to make sure every part of the organization adopts that and really believes that that's the North Star metric they should be compensated on.
It was part of a design, which I say we looked at the what I call the customer engagement lifecycle or the customer engagement blueprint. It's a high level outside in view of the life that customers go through, not your sales process, not your marketing process. We scrapped all of those and we adopted an outside in life cycle. Everything was written in the terms of what the customer's trying to achieve at that point in their journey.
I know that we always get really wrapped up in a customer journey and we're always like thinking, oh, they should log in this many times or they should, you know, use this feature after 6 months or they should do this. But that's all, like you said, very internal. It's what we would like rather than what they would like.
Yeah. You know, customers have got their own journey and they'll change their journey according to their needs and circumstances. So I've come to the conclusion that other than at a very high level, understanding what that life cycle looks like, customer journeys are a waste of time.
Another topic we can spend a whole nother podcast on, Dave. But before I get way, way off topic here, we do want to talk about customer-led growth. In this podcast, we also like to talk about customer success. And you've had a lot of influence as well as growth in the customer success sphere or industry, as you might call it. And I would love to understand how your focus on customer first or customer success or customer-led growth has led to where you are today?
It goes back a long way, Anika. It goes back probably best part of 40 years. And I got quite early in my career very interested in the whole thing around customers. That stayed like a bit of a red thread through my career. The names change, you know, customer quality, customer service, customer experience, customer success. I don't know what the next one's going to be yet, but there will be another one in another 3 to 5 years' time.
Ever-evolving industry.
There's a great book was written quite a few years ago called Fad Surfing in the Boardroom. And that's a lot of these ideas and that are created by suppliers because they need to create a new category or they need to, you know, position themselves in a different way. So it will come along. Now, having said that, there are some eternal truths. So, for example, if you go back to, I think, the 50s or 60s, Peter Drucker said, the purpose of a company is to win and retain a customer.
Yeah, it is. It's the basis of how we do business. It's how you're going to keep doing business, because you need to acquire new business, but you also need to keep it in order to keep your business afloat.
So, and I was involved in some research with a company, a management development company I was working for in Belgium back in the 80s, late 80s. And as part of that, we came up with a definition of what we then called service excellence. And the definition is one I still hold true to today, and it's in the book, and it's what it's. I use it almost every day. In terms of what the company needs to do, it's everything the organization does to profitably win, satisfy, retain, and grow its chosen customers better than the competition. And each part of that, to me, is important. And quite often, by the way, the competition is not somebody else offering a similar product or service. The competition is where else could the customer spend their money? Puts the emphasis back on how do we convince the customer that we've got something of value to them? Well, the only way you do that is by focusing on their agenda, not yours.
Yeah, 100%. It should be customer-led, which is exactly what we are going to talk about today. And that is obviously what your book is all centered around. And I really want to speak more about customer-led growth, but when should a SaaS company really shift to customer-led growth? Because let's be honest, in the early days, I think a lot of people are sales-led growth or even product-led because they're trying to find, you know, some sort of proof of concept of a product. When should a SaaS company really shift to the customer-led model?
I don't think it should ever shift. I think that is because it starts out as being customer-led. So if you think about, and I've been in that, you know, I've been a founder. Why do you start a company? You start a company because you've come up with a way, you think you've come up with a way of helping a customer solve a problem that they've got. That sounds a bit like customer success to me.
Yeah, it very much does.
And you go through phases, you go through stages of working out, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And that's the stage called product market fit. And you get that stage. But you should never lose sight of the fact that the reason you started the company was because you could help customers better than others. So I think the best companies don't have to make that shift, because I think the best companies hold on to what I call that founder intent. They don't lose it.
That's very true. Yeah. You should just have that rightful mindset, intent, purpose built, tool, function, whatever you're serving, yeah. Whatever product you're living up. It should be purpose built for serving a need for your customer.
Well, that's why I say you don't make the shift, because I think if you do it well, you're already there.
Yeah.
The challenge is, how do you hang on to it?
Very good challenge. I think we'll get into that a little bit later. But I know that one of your chapters when we were speaking before recording is called Focusing on People and Not Necessarily a Company or the Customer. So why should customer success or companies in general focus on people and not necessarily a company or a logo name?
Who makes the decision to buy? A company? A person. Who uses your product? A company? A person.
A person. Yeah.
Yeah. Who advocates for your company?
A person, yes, or multiple people.
There's your answer.
Very true. Very true. And I think that we forget that, though. I think that that's one thing that we forget in the, especially B2B SaaS world, is we're like, oh, we need to attain this logo or this customer or this company. But at the end of the day, we are all individuals that are purchasing. We're individuals that are using. And yes, you can make a collective that makes up the company, but there's still people that are talking about your product.
Yeah. And that is a trend which I think if you go, you know, if you look at product-led, I think one of the trends that they've picked up on, and particularly if you go to the freemium part of the market and the product-led piece, when we started ClickTools, you know, the standard selling model was see, try, buy. Get your message out there. Somebody sees it. You have a conversation with them. They try it as probably as part of a free trial, and then they buy it, and then they get value. So it's see, try, buy, value. It's not that anymore. It's now see, try, value, and then maybe I'll buy. Actually, the buying unit shifts. It's no longer the big corporate. Increasingly, the buying unit is an individual.
Yeah, it does. It does shift. You're right. It changes the whole perspective of the sales cycle.
Yeah, so that changes the focus, that changes the emphasis, it changes the way that you need to think about who you're dealing with. It also changes an ideal customer profile.
Which is actually my next question. You've already led into it, which I want to understand is like, so you start moving away from like less focus on faceless companies or logos, and you're now focusing on a human, a person. How does that then change your ICP?
To me, an ICP's got three fundamental elements. Are there target companies in there? Yes, because your product or service probably addresses the needs of, you know, some companies better than others. So at DeepCrawl, for example, we're in the business of technical SEO. The people that can take most advantage from that are people that have got big websites. Because if that website's not working, then you've got the, you know, no matter how good the technical aspect of it is, if it's a tiny website, it's not going to make that much difference to your business. So the company piece is important. But the second part of an ICP, and I think the piece that is seriously underinvested in, is what I call role profile. And that gets back to people. Who's the people that make the decision? Who are the people that are going to use your product? Who are the people that are going to champion and advocate for that? And then you've got to understand, well, what are their needs and expectations? What are their challenges? What's their pain and gain points? How are they measured? So the role profile is a piece that I find is typically underinvested. You know, we stick with this thing called, this faceless thing called the customer. We don't get down. And then the third piece of an ICP is situational factors, context. You know, people are going to be more likely to buy if they're in a certain context, if they've got certain challenges and certain problems. And that's very much around, so targeting is not just who, but also when. Target companies, role profiles, situational factors. And the one thing that, again, the common thread that runs right through, or should run throughout all of that, is how do those people understand value? How do they measure performance of themselves?
Yeah. And then again, coming back to that self, coming back to that person, coming back to that human element that I think a lot of people need to start considering, and shifting calling customer to people or individuals, which is super key, as you've obviously led to already in some of the conversation we've had. But I'm sure that starting to focus like that as a company leads to some behavioral differences or changes, maybe the way they interact with you. Have you noticed any changes when you start shifting that pattern, or do you think that it's fairly the same whether you say faceless customer versus individual human first approach?
There's a premise behind that question, Anika, which is if you really believe that you are selling to individuals and that you're delivering value to individuals, you therefore put in place processes to deliver value to individuals. So this concept of a single outcome, I think, is leading us, it's very, very valuable. But how many people that you sell to and you service day in, day out really care about ROI? Honestly, they don't.
There's a few, I'm sure. There's like the CFO that wants to understand, can I save some money?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I'm not saying that, you know, that single outcome is not important. I'm saying it's not the driving force for everybody that you deal with. So what I'm saying is understand what value means to the individual, then understand how you deliver value to that individual.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And you need to just have the right conversation, the right intent. You also need to make sure you're really planning for that individual, like you said, rather than, hey, how is Oracle or Salesforce going to use my product? Well, Oracle and Salesforce are great, but then you have individual customers. And then you need to tailor everything you do or how you interact with them for those people that are actually using your software.
Correct. And part of what that leads to is, well, actually then I can't have a success plan.
You just keep leading to my next question. The next thing I wanted to ask you is, how do you then go building a success plan now for an individual rather than a company? Like, where does that shift happen, or how do you even make that shift possible?
You make that shift possible through context, through understanding context. And the key to understanding context is data.
Okay. Let's say I have all the right data and everything, and now I'm building a success plan for a person instead of a company. What kind of success plan should I expect to give my now person instead of company if I was a CSM?
So I think the premise, and this is something that we've been working on at Deepcrawl, is when you get down to the level of the individual, things shrink in terms of their scope. So I think what you do, Anika, is you don't think about taking an individual on a journey. You think about what data informs me best about their current context, and using my expertise and my knowledge of working with probably thousands of other customers in the same boat, what's the next best thing that they can do? So you shift from journey to what I call next best value.
So milestones are like outcomes or what you can do next steps, really.
Yes.
Okay. And then you just fully focus the success plan on those singular steps. Let's say get 1, 2, 3, a tick list of items, and this is what you're trying to achieve. And let's just go through that rather than being full-blown outcomes, metrics, all those kind of things.
So, you know, one of the things about customer journeys and most success plans that I've seen is that they're not actually customer journeys, they're our journeys. This is the path we want to take you down. Well, what if my priorities change? I want to do something different. What if I think actually there's a better way of doing this? One of the chapters in the book, it talks about their choice, not your choice. So rather than say, look, you know, do this, you say, well, you know, here's a couple of options, 2 or 3 options you could do. And by the way, there's some good psychology in presenting people with options, but saying here's a preferred option.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it naturally, then you naturally lean towards that, especially if you're setting it up as a preferred option.
And the more you go down to individual choice and that, the more you get granular. So all you're doing all the time in terms of, and I'm not sure I even want to call them success plans anymore. They're value steps. You are literally taking someone this step, next step, next step, next step. It's value, a success plan. Most of them I see have got, you know, a start point and an end point. We're getting to the point now where actually, you know, what we're doing is thinking about how we deliver value iteratively. Do it, repeat, do it, repeat, do it, repeat. Oh, by the way, in repeating this, we're probably reinforcing the case in that individual's mind and aggregate that for the case for renewal. And we might identify cases where somebody and, you know, needs an area of additional value. Ooh, that needs some product or service you don't currently have access to. That's called upsell. So part of the book talks about a change from some people reasonably familiar with a funnel and a dicky bow as a model of taking customers through a life cycle. I've come up with a belt.
Okay. A belt, like a one that...
A belt that goes around your waist.
Okay. Okay.
With a buckle. There's a fairly linear process that gets you to the initial acquisition. But thereafter, what you've got effectively is a continuous cycle of delivering value, reinforcing revenue, delivering value, reinforcing revenue, delivering value, reinforcing revenue. And by the way, there's a little bit of the belt sticks out at the end, usually. That's called advocacy. So that leads you to the next cycle.
Interesting. I've never thought, I'm visualizing this now, and I've never thought of it in the form of a belt. Everyone thinks of it as like you said, a circle or, you know, a linear graph or something like this. Yeah, interesting, interesting. I do want to bring up a bit more controversial of a topic now that we've talked definitely that the individual is so important, which is great. People, not logos, like we said, but churn must be so much harder if you're talking people to people and not company to company. Am I right? Is shifting to people, not customer, a key to reducing churn, you think? What have you seen?
I think the answer is it is. It's about how decisions are made. You know, so if you go and look at all the sales methodologies, everybody focuses on the decision maker. And by the way, that's a very important, you know, having that relationship and maintaining that relationship with the people that can sign the check. That matters. But if you've got an organization where the decision maker says, oh, I think this is a great product, and everybody else in the company is saying it's crap, don't make us use that, please. I'm not underestimating the importance of a decision maker, but equally, I think we often underestimate the importance of influence on that decision maker. And by focusing on making those individuals successful on terms that they understand and recognize, I think what I'm doing is building up a body, a groundswell of people saying, I want this. Don't take this away. I need this. because I'm being better as a result of it.
Hmm. And also like just connectivity, I think. I think bringing a community of people together or just that connectiveness results in stronger bonds or stronger relationships as well.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Listen, we could keep talking about this topic, I'm sure. And I'm sure a lot of people have already gotten tidbits of your book, which is, like I said, coming out. But probably when this podcast is released, it's already out so everyone can get a hold of it. But I don't want to give up too much more. But I do want to wrap up with our quick fire questions, which I'm going to challenge you to try to answer these next few questions in one sentence or less. Most of my guests have not been super successful at this, but let's see if you can do it, Dave.
I like a challenge.
Yeah, let's get started then. What do you think is next for the CS industry?
That the company aligns around value to the customer.
Good start. Good start. Second question is, what sort of tool does your CS team currently use or tool set?
Plan Hat for playbooks and, most importantly, the customer portal, Salesforce for commercial management and reporting, and Pendo for app telemetry and in-app messaging.
Amazing. Still doing really well with answering these super quick. Next one, which I think I already know the answer to, but what sort of compensation should a CSM get? Should it be base salary or base salary plus a commission and bonus?
Base salary plus a company-wide single bonus.
And then finally, what is your favorite part about customer success or being a CSM?
Seeing people succeed, whether they be people that are working for us or customers.
Dave, I think you're the first person to answer all of those in a sentence or so or less. So kudos to you. If I had an award to give, I'd give it to you. But before we wrap up and before we finish up today, where can our guests find more about you and your book? Can you give us a little bit of an insight of how they can get in contact?
The best place to find me is usually on LinkedIn. I think my name there is David Jackson UK. And the book is... The Kindle version is available for pre-order on Amazon.com, Amazon.co.uk, Amazon.in, Amazon.de, so most of the major markets. And the paperback edition should be available on the same date, which is the 27th of September.
Amazing. And I'll make sure we put everything in the show notes so that everyone can have links to every Amazon link as well as onto your LinkedIn as well. Thank you so much, Dave, for spending time with us today and sharing your insights on customer-led growth. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Nika.
Thank you for listening to the Customer Success Channel podcast today. We hope you learned something new to take back to your team and your company. If you found value in our podcast, please make sure to give us a positive review and make sure you subscribe to our channel as we release new podcasts every month. Also, if you have any topics that you would like me to discuss in the future, or you would like to be a guest on the podcast, please feel free to reach out. All my contact details are in the show notes. Thanks again for listening and tune in next time for more on customer success.